Now, I'm very pleased to have with me today Julian Wybra, who's the proud author of a book on Billericay entitled Billericay People of Volume 1, The Muster Roll 1539 and the Marian Persecutions 1555 to 1558. So welcome to Phoenix FM, Julian, or should I actually say welcome back, because you've been here a few times, haven't you?
Yeah, a few times over the last few years, yeah. Nice to be here again.
Good stuff. Now, first off, I've got to ask you, on the basis of the title says Volume 1, I guess there's going to be some follow-up books to come. How many additional volumes do you have in mind, and what sort of time frame are you looking at?
Well, I've got about five more in mind.
Five?
Yeah, about five, with a time frame, perhaps one a year for the next 5 years, but they'll include things about the Mayflower Pilgrims, or mm-hmm. those of them that came from Billericay, about the founders of Billerica in Massachusetts, who came from Billericay. And there's also a 16th century map of Billericay and its owners, which has never been properly explored, and several other things. So there's enough for several volumes yet.
I would say there is, that's for sure. So what was your thinking initially behind the time period that you've chosen for this one? Because presumably you could have taken any period at all.
Well, the 1500s, really, there's so little done on Billericay material. There's nothing ever been written on the Essex muster rolls. They've never even been transcribed. And there's hardly anything on the other material. And the people that appear in all these documents are all connected throughout the century by the events, so that you end up with a sort of Downton Abbey come Forsyte saga, with the people reappearing every few years in various documents.
So now, this title includes reference to the muster roll, which sounds like a kind of population census. Is that what it was?
Well, it's similar. At the particular time of this muster, which was 1539, there was a real danger of a French invasion. So a list was drawn up of all the able-bodied men and women from every town or village, such that the king could then call on them for armed service in the event of an invasion. And that list included all the weapons that each person held, so bows and arrows, bill hooks, armour, swords, horses, well, all sorts of armaments.
And they would have actually held those themselves?
Well, the horses, arms and equipment were not generally supplied by the government, and they had to be found and kept by the people. There was an Act of Parliament that gave an elaborate schedule of what arms were to be kept by noblemen, gentlemen, and what they called temporal persons. That's the likes of you and me.
Yes.
And that was graded according to a person's annual income. Now, most people had a bow and arrows for hunting rabbits, or a bill hook, which might double as a farming implement. But some men were ex-soldiers, and they still had their swords and their daggers. And the muster also recorded the value of someone's land or goods. So if they couldn't bear arms, they were still liable to provide financial support if necessary.
They get you then, as they do now.
That's
so
right.
Having obtained all this information, what was the next step by the authorities?
Well, from the list of able-bodied men, those aged between 16 and 60, a selection was made. And those selected were drilled and then put through some sort of training.
And how often did they do that?
Well, musters were called any time there was an invasion scare. Now, I chose 1539 for two reasons. First, it's the only one that survived regarding Billericay. All the others in the 1500s haven't. And secondly, because it fits in with the subject matter of the rest of the book. So the threat of invasion in 1539 came about because of the Pope and all Catholic Christendom's disgust with Henry VIII's break with the Church of Rome and the establishment of the Church of England. And they saw him as a heretic. And in 1539, he embarked on a rapid program of castle building and muster taking to try and forestall an invasion.
All right. Well, right at this point, perhaps we could move on to the other subject covered in your book, which is the Marian persecutions. What were they all about?
Well, they're named after Queen Mary, and they were basically...
Bloody Queen Mary.
That's it. The Bloody Mary, that's
yeah.
it. And they were basically a series of religious persecutions that took place immediately after Mary took the throne. And they began in January 1555, once Mary had changed England's religion back to Roman Catholicism. So Protestants who refused to convert to Catholicism were tried in church courts, and then they were handed over to the secular arm for punishment. And Mary's Catholic bishops demanded severe measures to deal with Protestantism. They demanded those from the government, and in fact they obliged the government to revive an ancient act of parliament dating back to 1401, enabling them to burn heretics at the stake. And the first person to be burnt at the stake was on the 4th of February 1555, and the last was on the 15th of November 1558, and they only stopped because Mary died 2 days later. 288 Protestants suffered that excruciatingly painful death, and in fact another 34 died in prison from torture before they could be burnt.
Charming. Mm. Have you got any specific examples of local people?
Yeah, several of those who appeared in the muster roll that I mentioned, they reappear 16 years later being persecuted for their faith. So one minute they're taking up arms to defend their king, and the next minute their queen is burning them. Now, one example is an archer, Thomas Watts. He was actually a linen draper in Billericay. He was arrested on the 26th of April, 1555, and he appeared before the church courts twice, and then before a bishop's court twice more. He refused to recant, that's to say to give up his Protestant beliefs. He was declared a heretic, and he was delivered to the secular powers for punishment. Now, he was given some more chances to recant, but he refused to deny his beliefs. He was then sent to Newgate Prison, and from there to Chelmsford, where he spent his last night in an inn, Scott's House. And in fact, the site is marked today by a blue plaque just by the bridge over the River Cann in Chelmsford. Mm. And he was burnt at the stake in front of the old county court on the 10th of June 1555. Now, he was the first. There were three other Billericay inhabitants who were burnt. Elizabeth Thackwell and Joan Horns. They were both young girls. They were about 15 and 17. And they were burnt at the stake at Smithfield. A third one, Margaret Ellis, died in prison before she could be burnt. And there were two more Billericians who were interrogated and tortured, but survived and were let go. Now, in all these cases, their testimonies were recorded. In some cases, even their last words, and they can be very moving indeed, and I reproduce some of these in the book. But not all of them became martyrs. There's one, Thomas Bryce. He escaped capture early in Mary's reign, and he fled to the continent. And then he returned to his father's house in Billericay to smuggle heretical books. That's to say, the Bible in English and Protestant prayer books and so on. He smuggled them back into England. He had several lucky escapes, one through a secret passage, and there are supposed to be a number of tunnels under Billericay, secret passages, so maybe it was one of those. And for a time he was hidden in the house of the Marquess of Northampton, which was behind the church in Ramsden Bell House. Anyway, from there he led a clandestine Protestant congregation. And after Mary died, he became a priest, he married, and he became the vicar of Little Birstead. And he also wrote a history of the martyrs of the Marian persecutions.
Now, obviously, you know, he came up on top in the, at the end. But you mentioned a couple that had managed to escape, or they were not ultimately, or didn't face the ultimate penalty. Why was that?
Well, obviously the records aren't complete, and it may well be that the two that survived either recanted under torture, or else there was not enough evidence to convict them.
Well, it's clearly a time of religious persecution. The tables were then obviously reversed when Elizabeth ascended the throne. Was this the same sort of thing?
Well, no. Elizabeth didn't burn anyone because of their beliefs, or indeed execute them. That analogy is often made between the Catholics and the Protestants, Mary and Elizabeth, but it's a false one. In Mary's reign, Protestants were executed for their faith, and they've largely been forgotten or ignored. Whilst in Elizabeth's reign, only those Catholics who were engaged in treason were executed. And many of those, of course, have been canonized and are commemorated today as martyrs. So Protestant doctrinal belief does not involve treason, or indeed any crime at all. So you can contrast Protestants and Catholics' fates, but you can't really equate them.
So what other evidence exists of the local effects of all this national religious turmoil?
Well, in 1539, the vicar of Great Birstead, which included Billericay, was Hugo Gibson, and the muster roll recorded that his curate was John Oakley. Now, the Roman Catholic Church forbade clergy to get married, and Hugo Gibson remained celibate. After the break with Rome, Henry VIII's son, the Protestant Edward VI, in 1547, allowed Anglican priests to marry, and Hugo Gibson took advantage of that and did so. But when the Catholic Mary came to the throne, 6 years later, she immediately put a stop to the practice, and in the following year, she removed all married clergy from their posts. About a quarter of English clergy were deprived of their living, and among them was Hugo Gibson, and he was replaced by Thomas Holland in 1554. Then, when Bloody Mary died, Elizabeth came to the throne, the Protestant faith returned, Holland was replaced as vicar in 1559 by his old curate, John Oakley, who first appeared in the muster roll. And wherever you live in Essex, if you look at the board in the church for the years 1553 up to 1558, 59, you'll find turmoil in the vicars appearing on the lists.
Sounds like a nightmare of a time. So when's the next book coming out, and what period do you think you're going to be covering for that? Because you've highlighted quite a few that you've got.
Well, I hope to have one coming out in 2017. And the reason is it'll be in good time for 2020, which will be the 400th anniversary of the voyage of the Pilgrim Fathers to the New World in the Mayflower. Now, the Mayflower's governor, that's to say the ship's governor, and three of the passengers were from Billericay. So, the next book will be the story of the voyage and the attempted settlement, focusing on them in particular.
Well, I hope that when that comes out, you'll come back in and talk to us again on that. But going back to the current book, just remind us where you can get it, how much it's going to cost, and just mention the title again.
Okay. It's available now from the Cater Museum in Billericay, and they will benefit from all the profits derived from sales. It's available for £9.75, and it can be bought direct from the museum, or if you're in Billericay Library on Saturday, you can get one from me, because I'll be there at a history fair book signing from 10 till 4.
And just to recap the title?
Yeah, the title is Billericay People, Volume 1. And this volume is The Muster Roll, 1539, and The Marian Persecutions, 1555 to 58.
Well, great. Thank you very much indeed, Julian. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us today. Good luck with the book. And based on what you've told us so far, it looks like a must-read for anyone interested in local history. And don't forget to keep us posted, as I said before, on the next book, whenever that comes out.
Will do. Thank you.
Thanks.